Welcome to The Coin Club, a podcast brought to you by the Seven House Coins Currency Bullion, where we discuss everything related to numismatics. I'm glad to have you along with me for my journey and excited to share with you the very best of numismatics. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 26 of the Coin Club podcast. Very happy to be back here with you, enjoying this hobby that we all love so much. I've been enjoying these warm summer months and all the great things that summer has to offer. Visits with friends and family, cookouts, and seeing people who I haven't seen in a while. Got a chance to take a swim at a friend's house that I haven't seen before the COVID outbreak, and it reminded me of an interaction we had a while back. You always hear people in the community give you advice to be careful who you tell about your hobby, and rightly so. There are those who have ill intent, but you need to be comfortable enough to share your hobby with your close friends and family. On a visit to his place, he told me that through his years of working, he would keep some of the things that passed through the store's register that he found interesting. People paid with anything, he told me. I was interested to see what he had, and he brought out this full jar of coins and some paper money that he had. He had some red seals in there, if my memory served me correctly, a couple silver half dollars, and even a Morgan dollar. Yes, someone paid their bill with a Morgan dollar. Incredible. Remember, there are people out there who are hardcore collectors, and there are those that are casual who set aside interesting things they find over the years. And if you don't share your love of collecting with people, then you might never know who is near and dear to you that is keeping a couple of those interesting things set aside. Well, friends, as I said before, I'm happy to have you along with me for this episode of the podcast. We're going to give you a dose of the news, some roll hunting tips and reminders, the WorldCoin Spotlight, and we're going to end it off with a listener email. Not so much the email itself, but the true meaning of the hobby beyond self-satisfaction and hoarding those precious beauties we all adorn. I love telling a story and love interacting with my listeners. So thanks again, folks, and let's get on with the show. The United States Mint has announced that Director Ventress C. Gibson will be participating in the ribbon-cutting ceremony for the American Numismatic Association's World's Fair of Money in Illinois. Although the World's Fair of Money will have already taken place as of the publication of this podcast, if you were lucky enough to be in attendance for this event, you might have been able to chat it up with Director Gibson. She was at the Mint's booth to speak to visitors and attendees. The World's Fair of Money ran from August 16th to the 20th. The Mint's booth at the event had a display with the upcoming American Women's Quarters ornaments and a display with the special limited edition 2021 American Eagle at Dusk and Dawn 35th Anniversary Gold and Silver 1-ounce coins that are scheduled to be auctioned on September 1st. For the remainder of August and September, the Mint is planning the following releases. August 26th, we'll see the American Women Quarters 2022 ornaments. August 30th, American Innovation $1 Coin 2022 Rolls and Bags for the state of Tennessee. September 8th, the American Eagle 2022 1-ounce Palladium Reverse Proof Coin. And on September 26th, the United States Coast Guard 1-ounce Silver Medal. Great Collections Auctions has sold the finest known PCGS graded 1942 San Francisco Minted Mercury Dime. Graded by PCGS at Mint State 68 plus full bands and CAC certified, this auction ended on August 14th with a total of 11 bids. The hammer price was $54,500 with the buyer's fee. It realized $61,312.50. Don't forget about the fees when you're out and about at those auctions. It's easy to forget about them while you're in the heat of the moment, bidding up on your favorite coin. I'm guessing if you're spending 60 grand or so for a coin, you're not too worried about the buyer's fees after the hammer price. Heritage Auctions has a piece up from the Bob R. Simpson collection, considered a legendary rarity. The 1927D St. Gaudens Double Eagle is on the auction block. By the time the podcast is out, the auction might be over, but currently, this PCGS-graded MS-66 example is up to a bid of $1,775,000. Is that in your neighborhood of monthly coin expenditures? If it is, I'd love to hear from you and talk coins. See what other things catch your eye. I doubt I'd ever be able to bid on something so coveted as this, but hey, you never know. Something that has been on the chat box of a lot of numismatists and shows and forums is what I'm going to lead into as the last part of the news article on this episode with PCGS. They have partnered with Stax Bowers to grade and encapsulate the last 500 of each of the silver and gold eagles, and the first 500 of them as well. The United States Mint and Stax Bowers came to an agreement to offer these at auction, and it has been a hot topic among some collectors. Should the Mint have been partnered with a private auction house to offer these, or should they have been available to the collectors who have spent countless years building their collections? I've not built a collection of these myself, so I guess I really can't offer too much of an opinion on this, but I would say that there are some other eagles out there that have been only available to a select group of people privy to a certain time or place. Baltimore comes to mind for me. Either way, whatever your opinion is on this, if you're going to get one, they're going to be in a PCGS holder for you to admire and add to your collection. Like other grading companies, PCGS has graded their fair share of mint errors and double struck coins, and are no stranger to them. Head on over to the website and read a great article written by John Sullivan on the topic. Lastly, if you're in the market to get some coins graded, I would suggest subscribing to their service. You can join anywhere from $69 to $249 a year. Just don't be like me and forget to use those free vouchers that come with some of the levels. I always set aside a handful of coins to turn in with my free vouchers, and this is the second year in a row that I've forgotten to send them in. You know how I find out how I forgot to send them in? I get the renewal notice saying I have 4 vouchers. Don't be like me. Use those bad boys. Send your coins in, get them graded, and enjoy all that the PCGS subscription has to offer. We've hit some of the northernmost countries in our travels to South America in the WorldCoin Spotlight. Today, we're going to venture down to a country who plays host to 60% of the lungs of the world, the Amazon rainforest. We're going to be visiting Brazil on this episode. Brazil is a very diverse country whose motto is order and progress. It is the largest country in both Latin and South America with a whopping 8.5 million square kilometers. It is the 5th largest country in the world with a population of just over 214 million people. How many coin collectors do you think they have down there? Such a large country shares borders with most of the other WorldCoin Spotlight recipients and the Atlantic Ocean. Portuguese is their official language, and they gained their independence from Portugal on September 7, 1822. Their GDP is estimated at around $3.585 trillion, so one would assume that they have a good coin or two to be featured here on the spotlight. Not only do you think that they would have a coin or two for us to mention here, they have some history in the manufacturing of coinage as well. The Casa de Moeda de Brasil is the official mint owned by the government. Can you take a guess when it was established? I never would have thought that their history with coinage would have dated back this far. Their mint was established in 1694. Through the years, they have produced banknotes, legal tender coins, medals, security prints, which includes passports, subway tokens, and postage stamps. For a while, they were the go-to mint for South American and African countries. Like many other countries and mints, they were racked with corruption and deficiencies in product quality that have drawn them away from producing coins for other countries. However, they are trying to revive their reputation and get back to the international market. The country now mints coins in the following denominations: 1, 5, 10, 25, and 50 centavo coins, as well as a 1 real coin. The coin we're going to feature today is one that you should be able to find just about anywhere if you take a trip to Brazil. With a mintage of almost 49 million coins, we're going to take a look at an affordable one to add to your collection. Not only is it affordable, it is very related to the numismatic community down there. It is the 2015 1 real coin, featuring a dedication to the 50th anniversary of the Central Bank of Brazil. It is a bimetallic coin. The obverse features the Central Bank building with the commemorative years of 1965 to 2015 and Banco Central do Brasil, 50 anos. The reverse has 1 real 2015 on it. Kind of reminds you of a commemorative coin from Europe. A feature that I find unique to this coin is that the edges are not smooth. They are not milled. They are both, with a smooth part and a milled part alternating. They offer a different edge to most coins. So if you're going to add this to your collection, you probably want to get two. One to touch and show everyone else, and one to keep in pristine and uncirculated condition. The coin weighs in at 7 grams and has a stainless steel center with a bronze-plated steel ring. It is 27 millimeters round and 1.95 millimeters thick. With some of the high-dollar coins we featured on the spotlight, this one can be had at a very reasonable cost. E-Numista shows an uncirculated version is worth around $1.88 at the time of this podcast. Not bad to add a nice coin to your collection. Okay, all you roll hunting junkies out there, we're going to take a little bit of a different approach to the roll hunting segment today. We're going to head on over to eBay and check out the highest dollar error coins that have recently sold and get your mouths watering. Can you find any of these coins in your change? Keep listening and find out. The first one tonight and the highest dollar value error most recently sold on eBay is an 1893-0 minted $10 gold eagle that was broadstruck out of collar. New listeners pop up to the podcast all the time, and their level of interest in the hobby varies greatly, so I'll try to be brief, but give all the details. So the O mint mark for you newbies is the New Orleans mint mark. If a coin is broadstruck, it is a coin that is struck outside of the collar. It expands wider than a normal coin, sometimes much greater than the normal size. You can have two different types of broadstrucks. If it is just struck outside the collar, it is a broadstrike. If it is not centered, then it is considered an uncentered broadstrike. The second highest priced coin sold in the error section on eBay was a PCGS graded 1955 double die obverse Lincoln cent, graded at MS62 red brown. Now, you seasoned collectors are already complaining. A double die is not an error. It is a die variety. However, a die variety is an error on a die that has struck many coins and gets even more in depth in that the double die variety occurs when the die is doubled due to an error in the hubbing process. More of a reason for all you new people in the roll hunting community to learn about how errors and varieties are made. This 1955 DDO sold for $4,900. Probably not going to find this one in your change. Not probably, you're not going to. And number three to be on the lookout for, mostly when you're out and about at a dealer or a show, is the number three top dollar error coin sold on eBay. It is a 1918 over 7 Denver minted Buffalo nickel. This one, to me, is pretty easy to spot, as the 7 is very clear and the 8 is very clear on the date as well. This one sold for $4,825. Number four highest dollar error coin sold on eBay, as of my investigating, was one you could possibly find in your change, but again, highly unlikely. I've never found anything like this myself, but it's a modern dated coin, so keep your eyes out. It is a 2016 Lincoln cent, which is triple struck, off-center struck through a broad strike. Graded MS63 red by PCGS, it sold for $4,000. Couple things going on with this coin, as evident in the listing headline. It is triple struck, it is struck off center, and it is struck through broad strike. Funny thing with the listings that I find ironic is right below the selling price. It says you can buy this coin for $173 for only 24 months with PayPal credit. If you need to buy this one through credit, you probably shouldn't be buying this coin. Just my 2 cents. The one that rounds out the top five highest selling error coins for this research on eBay is going back to number two, actually. It is again a 1955 DDO. Beautiful coin, and if you miss this one, even without a loop, you're blind and you probably shouldn't be coin roll hunting. Heck, I'm pretty sure even a person with sight impairment could pick this one out. It cashed out at a whopping $2,827.77. All right. One last modern coin that I can't even believe sold for what it sold for. The listing title says, get ready, 2022 P. Dr. Sally Ride Quarter, Major Error Ghost Comet Tail from Head. Have you seen one? That was the title, folks. I don't see the value in it. Look it up for yourself and you tell me. I always love to hear comments from my listeners. It's got some blue garbage on the photo and looks like it could have been possibly an ender on a coin roll. The seller has a 1,702 positive feedback. Doesn't mean it's a winner, folks. This coin sold for $2,499. Even in their listing, they say that they're asking for a silly price, but they're open to offers. What's that they say? The coin you're selling is worth whatever the buyer is willing to pay. I guess. Happy hunting, friends. Truly describe you all as friends. I want to let you know that I may not be able to compete on the level of podcasts and blogs and such like the big boys, but we do have a fantastic listenership and we are very interactive with each other. My podcast may not come out weekly. It may not have fancy sponsors or even celebrity interviews in the numismatic community, but what I do have is fantastic listeners and they have a story. And you all know I love to tell a story. It's what makes our community great. It's what turns a routine coin club meeting or coin show visit that you think is going to be an hour or so into a trip down memory lane or reminiscing with an old friend. It's what should be a simple, I'm going to be home in an hour, lovey, until I ran into an old friend and was catching up 2 hours later. Well, this one is no different than that. It's a regular listener to the podcast who wrote to me for some feedback for the show. By regular, I don't mean run-of-the-mill. I mean regular listener. My people are not regular by any stretch of the imagination. They are truly part of the family, and I relish each and every one of them. As I said before in so many words, I value these type of interactions more than I can say. Well, let's get on with the story then, right? I got an email from a fan of the podcast and an avid listener. His name is Joe, and he wanted to reach out to me and let me know about some of his coin collecting experiences. It might not be something that Joe thought would be super interesting to anyone else, but for me, let's get into it. By sharing with me some of his experiences, not only do I get enjoyment out of it, people all over the world are going to have something else to put on the list of numismatic spaces to research. Laugh if you will, but the podcast does reach people all over the world. Check back to previous episodes where we check out numismatics from countries who I have listeners from. Joe is from the United States, and like me, he enjoys traveling across the pond. The pond is probably saying that some of you have come to love to hate by now, but it's what I use. When you go east, you're traveling across the pond. I have had the great fortune of being able to travel to places in Europe like France, Italy, and Spain, but Joe has ventured to one of the places on my list of must-goes, a place where a good majority of my ancestry is from. So says Ancestry.com. England. The journey for Joe starts when he gets on the tube, which is what the English lovingly refer to as what we call the subway. A story is a story, and just that. So I may be embellishing some of the details, but I hope Joe's smiling while he's listening to this. The day starts early with a ride on the tube to the Charing Cross Collector's Fair in London. At this time of the morning, I would imagine that it's not as crowded as a weekday with your regular commuters to work and the like. The show runs from Saturday from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. There are two entrances to the event, one at the Northumberland Avenue and one at Vigier Street. When he hops off the tube at Embankment Station, the show's right there. Located in an underground car park, this show has been running for an eternity. It's actually a collector's market, and I say that in quotes as it offers a wide variety of dealers specializing in stamps, old coins, banknotes, postcards, military collectibles, and various other ephemera. Now, if you thought that your favorite show has the title of the longest running one in the area, this one might be able to beat it. The Charing Cross Collector's Fair has been in existence since the 1690s. Yes, 1690s. Far beats anything here in the U.S., for sure. When it first opened up, it was a vegetable market and has morphed into what is today since 1974, a true collector's market where you can find anything imaginable. The existence and livelihood of the original market can be credited to its location between the River Thames and the Strand, which in today was ideal for transportation of perishable goods. 1845 saw the construction of the Hungerford Suspension Bridge just to improve access to this bustling market to the vendors, whose livelihood depended on it. For the next 130 years, the market remained the same, selling perishable goods to folks who needed them, and in 1974, it turned to what it is currently today, the premier collector's market that opens its doors weekly to people hunting for treasures and the like, as described above. You need coins? Head on over to Charing. You need postcards? Head to Charing. Looking for an English World War II artifact? Yep, you guessed it. Get off the tube and embankment and head to Charing. I'm sure Joe's day starts early so he can get there to browse the newest collectibles that they have on offer. He says there is a nearby Starbucks and Costa for breakfast. If it were up to me, judging from their menu online, I would probably choose to grab a quick bite of Costa and grab their Wiltshire ham and cheddar toasty. Toasty. I'm a sucker for ham, but they have a bunch of on-the-go items, coffee and the sandwich, and I probably wouldn't even sit down to eat it. I'd head right on over to the show. They have something called the M&S Billionaire's Yum Nut also. It looks good, too. The show, as described by Joe, is great for cherry picking of all sorts. And I do mean all sorts. U.S. and foreign and everything in between. While beating the aisles of the show, he found a 1950D Jefferson nickel for only a pound. I'm sure the treasures there are many, and I would love to be able to stroll the aisles and chat it up with the vendors, and maybe even Joe someday. Maybe I'll see him there someday while I'm wolfing down my Wiltshire ham and cheddar. While you're getting caught up in the greatness that the Charing Cross has to offer, he has yet another recommendation for all of us numismatists out there. The British Museum and their coin displays. This fine establishment is located on Russell Street in London and is open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily, and on Friday they close at 8:30. They have a department that is solely dedicated to coins and metals. This is no regular collection of coinage. It spans the origins from the 7th century BC to present day. If you think you can just take a couple minutes to run through this collection, you are probably wrong. There are over 800,000 objects on display to enjoy. The list of sights to see at this museum are many and includes weights, tokens, money boxes, the National Collection of Paper Money, which included 14th century Chinese banknotes up to the euro, and an internationally renowned collection of commemorative and art medals from the Italian Renaissance. I'm marking this one down on one of my places that I must see when I head over to England for sure. Thanks, Joe. Now wait, we're not done with Joe's story. If you're done walking the aisles of the Charing Market, wowed by the 800,000 different offerings at the museum, there is still one more place to see while you're over in England taking part in all the numismatic joy that we've been grateful to be a part of, thanks to Joe. Leave the museum and walk right across the street to Coincraft. Coincraft is Britain's coin shop, and they have been around since 1955. It is family-owned and have resided in their current location since 1976. Even if you don't want something for your collection, you need to stroll on over there after you're done the museum and check them out. They offer a wide selection of British coins, world coins, banknotes, medallions, medals, ancient coins, antiquities, and books. If you're thinking that this store might be out of your league, think again. They state on their website that they will only deal with collectors and not investors. Now you might be saying to yourself, Tone, I can't get over to England to see all this. Well, you can partake in at least this part of it. Coincraft publishes a 24-page full-color tabloid-sized newspaper called The Phoenix, and it can be yours for the low, low cost of free. I'm not sure what Joe does when he's done with all these adventures, but I can imagine he's sitting in a local pub or coffee shop with his wife and enjoying a pint, whether that be a coffee or a beer, and listening to her lament that she enjoys that he collects coins rather than some of the other off-the-wall offerings at Jarring that involve postcards and the like. Many thanks to Joe, who shared his story with me and who endured the embellishment throughout, and also a huge thank you to him for his service in the United States Army. It is an honor to have you as a listener, and thank you for your service to this country. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. You kind of got a Paul Harvey rest of the story on this one, and that is what it's truly all about. Take the time to chat with all your folks you come across while you're in your coin collecting journey. The stories will enrich your life and guide you down paths that you may have not known existed. Thanks again, friends. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Coin Club Podcast. I had a great time with you and look forward to sharing with you on the next episode. Please follow me on social media. I'm on Facebook at the 7 House Coins Currency Bullion and also on Instagram at the Coin Club Podcast. You can also go to my website, www.7houseccb.com, and give me some feedback on this episode or some suggestions on what you would like to see on future episodes. As always, I'm grateful to all of you for your support and look forward to seeing you the next time on the Coin Club Podcast.